Welcome back. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Rachel.
And every week we watch a formative movie from my childhood and then review it in the lens of feminism, equality, masculinity, gender, race, all of that fun stuff.
Yeah, the funnest.
And we also, Rachel makes a sugar-free treat for us that we eat and also discuss.
Yeah.
In terms of sugar and erythritol.
Yeah. Wow.
And altogether, that's a recipe for disaster. All right, so today for the movie, I'm pretty excited about this because this is a little bit different. As most of you know, we watched Ghostbusters last week, and though I think that movie is trash and dangerous, it is, I do like that in that movie they have to choose the form of Gozer the Destructor.
Sure.
And so we're going to kind of carry that over into this episode today. Rachel, I have three movies in my head, and it's going to depend on what kind of theme you want to talk about today. Do we want to talk about race? Do we want to talk about gender? Or do we want to talk about the absence of both? Because each of these three movies corresponds to one of those.
Oh, God. I mean, it's a fucking trap no matter what I choose.
It is. All three movies are going to be ones that you're not going to enjoy.
Don't you barf in here, Bones.
Yeah, get out of here and stop stalling, Rachel.
Okay,
choose the form of your destructor.
I am stalling.
So you want to talk about race, gender, or the absence of both?
Let's talk about gender.
Gender, okay. So today's movie, then, is going to be The Mask, starring Jim Carrey.
Oh, God damn it.
Yes. I've been really excited to watch a Jim Carrey movie because it was really formative for my childhood. I picked this one in particular because, one, I think it's got some extremely problematic gender roles going on in there and sexualization of women.
Sure.
But it also, like, for some reason, I feel like this is the one that I watched the most.
You watched The Mask the most?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, now I know objectively it is, like, one of the worst Jim Carrey movies other than The Cable Guy.
I loved The Cable Guy.
You're a psychopath, then. That's a good test for, like, who the fuck you shouldn't spend time with. Like, that person is devoid of emotion and just looks at you as a science experiment because they like The Cable Guy. Oh, my God. This changes everything.
Are you gonna get a divorce lawyer now?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, shit. I did like The Cable Guy when I was growing up, and everybody said pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's just the weirdest one, and I liked it because it was so weird.
It is the weirdest one. It, like, in some ways, I actually do enjoy watching The Cable Guy, but almost from, like, a... This sounds really, really dumb, but, like, from a hipster, like, ironic perspective, like... What a travesty this is. Like, how interesting.
That does sound dumb. No, I'm just kidding.
It sounds really pretentious. But, I mean, you know, nowadays, I think, what, we would both agree that maybe Dumb and Dumber or Ace Ventura is probably one of our favorite
Jim Carrey movies. Dumb and Dumber is my favorite. It may be one of my favorite movies.
It's a pretty great comedy. We're going to watch that eventually, too.
Oh, my God.
I, as much as I want to talk about that one on this show, it's just not as formative for me as The Mask was.
Man, so I have a very particular memory regarding The Mask.
Really? No, tell me.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. I'm kind of surprised. Like, I wasn't sure if you'd seen this movie before.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was obsessed with Jim Carrey. I wanted to be Jim Carrey. It was really weird.
He's the rubber-faced fart smith that's America, that's America's sweetheart.
Of course. Yeah. Of course I want to be Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
What was that from?
I think that was from an Onion article from back in like 1997 or something like that. I don't know why I remember that so much.
The sweetheart that America deserves.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Okay, this particular memory about The Mask. Whenever, you wouldn't be able to tell it now because I'm super type A about the cleanliness of my house.
Yeah.
But growing up, I was a fucking slob. Like,
were you really?
It was messy.
I didn't know that, and I never would have guessed that about you.
Yeah, I was super messy, and I think it was a way for me to exert some kind of control in the household where I had none.
Sure, yeah. Like, almost as an act of defiance or something?
Yeah, exactly. Which was pretty much how my childhood was defined. It's why I listen to so much metal to this day. But yeah. Anyway, we'd get home from church, and church was like 45 minutes away, y'all. I lived in the fucking country. We'd get home from church, and I'd have to clean my room every Sunday. That was the rule.
Okay.
And so, my dad would fucking turn on TV and start watching. You know how they'd always rerun, like, great movies, like, Sunday after early afternoon?
Oh, sure, yeah.
And he'd turn one of those on, and they'd be like, you can come down and watch this when you're done cleaning your room. And so, And that's totally reasonable. That's reasonable parenting. Sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, reward for hard work.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Not that it's hard work, but you know what I mean.
It was pretty bad. My room was a fucking trash
pit. Oh, okay. Well,
it was bad.
Know, I rescind it then.
Yeah. I'm not going to give myself too much credit here.
Yeah.
So I went upstairs and like, I looked around and I'm like, what if I just put all this shit on my floor into a laundry basket and throw it in my closet?
I mean, it's a quick solution that will get you something now,
yeah,
I guess.
Exactly.
Instant gratification.
So, because my dad had turned on The Mask and I wanted to watch it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so I did that and The Mask was playing downstairs and I was like listening to it and I'm like, oh, I want to be down there. This is so not fair. And so I came down and I was like, I'm done. And my mom goes upstairs and like, she was on to me, looks in my closet and... They were so hateful about it. It was the worst.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine a dumbass.
I can't imagine your parents, like, taking that in stride and just, like, laughing. They would make a huge deal out of something
like
that.
It was, like, super awful.
Like, you lied to us. Yeah. And, yeah, I can believe that about your parents. See, like, if it was my family and they found that, they would have been like, oh, so funny. You think you're so clever. Now clean it all up. And that would have been it. Like, because I feel like that's a little more of a natural consequence to be like, yeah, okay, so you put it off, but now it still has to be done, so do it.
Yeah, do it.
Oh, man. Well, that's terrible.
Yeah.
So what a terrible association. I mean, I guess was it exciting for you to kind of be watching the movie and, like, have a little secret that you, like, thought you got away with something?
Oh, or? I didn't get to watch but, like, 5 minutes of it.
Oh, man.
That wasn't the only time I saw The Mask. I saw The Mask, like, later. My cousin's house or some shit.
Yeah, I can't say that I remember the first time I saw this movie. But I do just remember that, you know, we owned it on VHS. And
yes, we did too.
I pretty much watched it constantly.
That explains so much about you, Jordan.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's. up until the age of maybe like 25, I would watch movies over and over and over again when I liked them.
You still do that sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've seen Batman Forever probably like 100-something times. I've seen The Mask probably somewhere around 70 times.
That's fucking crazy. You know, some people have sexual partners. Like, that's the number of sexual partners they have. Except for you did it with The Mask.
I didn't jerk off to The Mask. Oh,
no.
Well, I don't know. I may have, actually, because this was a really formative sexual movie for me, too. Now that I think about it, because this is the one thing I wanted to talk about.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to get into some, like, you know, pervy puberty teenager stuff here.
Trigger warning, everyone.
But yeah, so this is Cameron Diaz's first movie, and she is highly sexualized in this movie.
She really is. And you
know
what?
Very much so.
I think I remember also this movie being a little sexually formative for me.
Really?
Not really my type. It didn't matter. Those boobs were on display.
Yeah, they're boobs on display, and when you're 13. A 13-year-old boy...
Or girl.
Like, yeah, exactly. I mean, we don't talk about this too often, but, like, masturbation occurs with women, too. Like, a lot.
Girls masturbate, everyone. Get over it. I used to do it. I used to fucking masturbate when I'd get home from high school. Oh, my God, if my parents hear this...
Yeah.
Oh, and your parents hear this.
Yeah, I hope my sister might be listening to this. But, ooh. Oh well, because this is some fucking personal truth.
Sorry, everyone.
Yeah.
But I used to masturbate when I get home from fucking school to Pink Floyd.
To Pink Floyd?
Before, it's because I had to do my math homework, and I needed to have a clear mind. So I'd fucking put Welcome to the Machine on really loud and like lay on my floor.
Yeah.
Jill off.
To then, Welcome to the Machine? Yes. What is the creepiest one of all to jerk off to? That's so weird. Or to Jill off to, I'm sorry.
But, and so then my mind would be like totally clear. I'd be able to do my math homework and not be thinking about Cameron Diaz's boobs.
Yeah. So, I mean, this movie came out, or I at least it was popular with me, right around the time when I started discovering my buddy and all that stuff. I thought that I was literally the first person to discover that if you rub your penis, it feels amazing. And I thought it was like, because, yeah, I mean, I didn't get this kind of sex education. I went to private school, a private Christian school and all that stuff, too. So, like, a lot of this stuff I had to find out for myself.
Did you ask your dad?
No. I didn't want anyone to know about this. I was trying, like, I remember sitting up at night. After having just relieved myself and thinking,
oh my God,
I'm going to be a fucking millionaire. Like, I'm going to write a goddamn book on this and people are going to think I'm amazing for having figured this out. Like, it was that level of surprise for me.
Damn. But it says so much about you and who you are as a person and who a lot of straight white men are when they're just like, I invented this. Only I could have invented this.
Yeah. I mean, like that is pretty much the case.
It's amazing. The chutzpah on you.
Yeah. You can see where the arrogance comes from. You can see where the claiming credit for other people's ideas comes from. Because how could someone else have possibly thought of this before? I'm a genius.
Me. How old were you? Like 13?
Yeah, like 12 or 13, somewhere around there. And, you know, this movie obviously was going to be a big part of that because, like, when you can't walk 5 feet without getting a boner, like, the mask is going to be, you know, your one opportunity. Because, I mean, back then there was no internet porn. It's your like...
boner was like a sounding rod for 90s women.
Yeah, it kind of was, yeah.
What the fuck?
I mean, like, there... The internet was just beginning. There was, like, hardly anything there.
If you wanted to look at a dirty picture on the internet, you had to, like, make sure nobody was going to be home for, like, 4 hours.
Yeah.
So that the phone, because the landline would be tied up.
It'll take that long to download your picture.
It's just a picture, and you're like, it's, like, one fuzzy boob.
Yeah.
Like, God damn it.
Yeah, it's crazy the lengths that you'll go to when you have... no options around. Like, I mean, I remember the fuzzy end of the
Skinamax.
The cable channels.
Yeah, Skinamax.
Like, you know, I would sit there for hours and just like
hours.
You could kind of hear in the white noise, like maybe a moan there and a gasp here,
my God.
Like all that stuff. And then like occasionally, like the fuzz would clear enough for you to see like an ass or a titty or something. And it's like, oh my God, best day ever. There were some desperate times back in the 90s, you guys.
You want to hear 90s in the country, y'all?
Oh,
because
God.
We didn't have cable.
You're just like going out to the barn and watching the fucking horses.
Oh, shut the fuck up. No.
Yeah.
Shut up. Don't be patronizing to rural people.
I'm just playing with you.
So we'd go and like play in the woods for like hours. Just be gone and playing in the woods. In this, like, in the deep woods, like, nobody would find you.
Yeah.
Well, that's an exaggeration. Someone would eventually find you.
Yeah, dead.
Yeah. And so sometimes we'd come across stacks of just pornos. Stacks of, like, Playboys and shit.
Oh, man, that, like, nowadays, that kind of creeps me out.
Isn't that terrifying?
I mean, hopefully you grabbed the porno and ran off somewhere else and didn't stay there. Because, like, what if that person came back? Like, that
would be... That's what we did. We like, would roll it up, put it in a backpack, and then run off with it.
Yeah.
Like little fucking squirrels after some fucking acorns in the ground.
Well, that's what happens when you leave your porn out in the open.
And sometimes...
Finders keepers.
Sometimes it'd be, like, hardcore magazines or
shit.
And we'd be like, eh, no.
Yeah.
We prefer the Playboys. That's why I read my first John Updike short story. It was in one of those pornos from the woods.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And it wasn't very good. And I was like, what? Why is this in here?
That's ridiculous. Like, I don't even know what to say to something like that. man. But yeah, anyway, I guess like, so...
Southern this grotesque.
This movie has some formative sexual memories for both of us, yeah. I suppose. I know this, if we had my old VHS copy of The Mask, there would be certain parts that like, where the film is obviously very worn from having been paused and rewound and fast forwarded again so many times.
Oh my God.
But let's talk about other memories about this movie, because okay. we'll get into how we feel about our sexual memories of this after we watch it. Yeah. I mean, I guess as far as the movie as a whole, like, how about you? What do you remember from this movie? Do you remember anything about the plot at all?
I remember the dog, the cute little dog.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Little Jack Russell.
Yeah, little Jack Russell Terrier.
And he gets the mask on his face. Yeah. You know what else I remember? Talk about being an American consumerist whore child. I remember there. I got a like little Happy Meal toy.
Yeah, yeah.
From Taco Bell, it was the little dog from the mask, and it had a green like rubber mask that went over its face.
That's awesome.
And I loved it.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, too. I actually remember a lot of toys associated with this movie, because I literally had, if you remember, there's a part where he's in, like, I think it's called the Coco Bongo Club or something.
Oh,
He has, like, a zoot suit on, and he pulls out, like, 50 million guns, because he's basically a cartoon character.
Yeah.
I had an action figure of that. So, like, it's the mask, and he's wearing his zoot suit, and then he has like some accessory guns that are like absurdly large that go in his hands.
Yeah.
And you like press a little switch on his back, and it like brings his arms up real quick, so it's like he's drawing the guns like really fast. When I was a kid, that was so cool, and I'd have him fight my little Star Wars figures, and he'd usually lose, because you know, you can't beat Luke Skywalker. He has a fucking laser sword and magic on his side. Like, what are you gonna do? You can't shoot that. What, are you going to shoot Darth Vader with a fucking gun? No.
I was just thinking about, what if Darth Vader and Saruman had a battle?
Yeah, I think that's been poured over before.
Has it?
One, you're breaking the Lord of the Rings rule right now.
I know, but you started.
But I am really curious about this, so we're going to take a quick detour and think about it for a second. Who would win, Darth Vader or Saruman? I mean, they both have magic.
They do.
They're kind of different kinds of magic. Mostly, like, telekinesis for Darth Vader, I guess. I mean,
there's some telekinesis. Well, not telekinesis. Sort of telekinesis for Saruman, too. Actually, they're pretty similar.
Yeah, but I feel like, as much as I love Darth Vader, you know what? I think maybe Darth Vader would win, because I don't see Saruman being able to, like, quickly stop a lightsaber blade.
Like, I do.
His spells seem to, like, take time and care to intone.
But I would agree with that, but I think that he would still have the upper hand just because he draws from old nature magic, and that is inherently stronger than future industrial magic, even though they're both in a fantasy realm. And I actually think that George Lucas may have stolen some ideas for Darth Vader from Saruman.
It's possible, I suppose.
But that would mean that George Lucas had to read a book, which is...
I mean, I feel like he was more of a...
suspect.
Why are we talking about this? We're talking about this movie. It's The Mask. How did we get here?
You said that we were taking the detour. I just went along.
Yeah, I know. And now I'm like, now I can't see the road back. I'm here, like, oh my God, we should have left a trail.
No, I'll lead us back. Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
So, what's happening here is that we took a detour because we were in the same time period in our heads.
Yeah.
That, like, The Mask existed for us and Star Wars existed for us.
Yeah,
and
special edition coming out.
Yeah, and Lord of the Rings existed for us.
So, as far as The Mask, we both remember toys.
Yeah.
It
says something about the movie.
I mean, this movie literally has cartoons in it, which I was a big fan of, like, Tex Avery cartoons.
Yeah.
From the time. And this has a lot of influence from that.
Sure.
This movie's actually based on a comic book.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Who wrote it?
I don't remember the author's name, but so the character of the mask that's in the comics is like way darker and way scarier and creepier than this is. Like, this is like, the movie version is very cartoonish and like silly. There are some dark things going on in the background, but in the comic book, it's like the Mask character is like extremely violent. And I was kind of surprised to find that out later on, because I just couldn't believe it that this movie is like related to that. Because if you ever read a comic version of it, it just feels totally different. So they kind of just like took a character idea and like turned it into, oh, this is, you know, Jim Carrey can be silly for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love the music in this movie. This was like in the 2-year period where swing music was making a comeback.
Oh my God.
Swing and ska. I
forgot about that.
Yeah. And so there are a lot of songs in this, a lot of big band swing music, Brian Setzer Orchestra, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I actually owned the CD for this soundtrack, and I would listen to it and sing that song Cuban Pete that Jim Carrey sings all the fucking time.
Oh my God, Jordan.
They call me Cuban Pete.
No.
I'm the king of the rumba beat. And when I play my maracas, they go chick chick a boom, chick chick a boom.
You better be fucking glad you were not in public school.
Oh, yeah. I love how you tell me constantly that I would get my ass beat. We've looked. One of the things we like to do as listeners is look at our old yearbooks.
Look at his old
yearbooks. Look at my old yearbooks. And Rachel just points out, like, who would have gotten their ass beat in public school. Spoiler alert, there's a lot of them.
I would say close to 60%.
Yeah.
Would have their asses handed to them at your school.
Like, immediately.
Yeah. And you would have been one of them.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because you were perfect for private school. Perfect for that environment.
Yes.
Vicky had some fucking foresight there. She was like, this fucker right here.
They're going to eat him alive. We got to get him out of there.
He won't even shut up for a quarter.
Yeah.
Like, for a minute. He can't.
Well, maybe that would have taught me to shut my mouth. Or you get a knuckle sandwich.
Knuckle sandwich.
Yeah.
Bullying is wrong, kids. Don't do it.
Yeah, exactly. But
one of the things I remember about this movie, besides Cameron Diaz's boobs and I don't know what else I said.
Action figure.
Oh, yeah, toys.
Oh, the dog. You remember
the dog.
Jack Russell. Yeah.
Yeah, the Jack Russell Terrier. Is not having any distinct feelings about this movie, which was weird
really?
For me.
Hmm.
Like, whenever we talk about, for instance, Andre the Seal, the saddest fucking movie ever, I can, conjure up an emotional memory from that.
Sure.
Not with The Mask. With The Mask, the only thing that comes up is that time where I got punished for trying to take a shortcut cleaning my room.
Yeah, it's funny because even the movies that you like, seem to have, like, sad or sad memories associated with them. So, like, it's funny because that's, like, for me, this movie made me laugh, and so that did give me an emotional reaction, where it was like, I love to laugh, I love to feel silly and goofy, and
I love that too.
But it's just funny to me that that's what's memorable for me. I have really negative memories associated with movies that gave me sad feelings, which maybe that is a product of being a man and being taught that those emotions are negative for men.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Yeah, and like weakness and stuff. You didn't like Lose It and All Dogs Go to Heaven? Oh my God.
All Dogs Go to Heaven terrified me, especially as being in a Christian household and watching that dog go to hell. I was like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah,
no
hell
way.
No. Oh yeah, I forgot about the dog hell. That was crazy.
Movie, yeah, All Dogs Go to Heaven scared the shit out of me. Like, almost literally.
Man, I really liked the hell parts.
I mean, looking back now, watching them now, it's like, oh yeah, this is metal. Like, what
an
awesome interpretation of hell. Like,
I liked it when I was a kid too, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
like Night on Bald Mountain.
I did not. Those scary parts were parts that I wanted to get through as quickly as possible.
Oh, man, yeah. There was one called. It was like it had Rodney Dangerfield's voice, and it was like.
Yeah, yeah. What's his name? The dog. It might have been just like Rodney the Beagle or something like that. Or Roger the.
Roger,
I think his name was Roger.
Roger Dangerfield, maybe?
Yeah, Rover Dangerfield.
Well, that's right.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah.
Rover Dangerfield.
Now I've got it.
That one made me sad too, because that dude was a puppy that was in a sack that was thrown in a river.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
It's fucked up. They don't make children's movies like they used to.
No, they don't. They don't make them that way at all. Nobody has to deal with death anymore. Everything's going to be fine, kids. Don't worry.
It's not fine. We're spiraling towards the abyss.
Yeah, horrible things happen every day, and we need to teach these kids that early.
Yeah, so that they can be real traumatized.
That's why we're all numb to school shootings, is because we grew up in the 90s when everybody was dying in their fucking children's movies.
That's right. And Columbine. Yeah. Plus Columbine.
But anyway, yeah, I guess we'll get around to watching this movie and see what we think. I'm excited to hear the songs again. I'm excited to laugh. I think I'm actually going to like this movie again.
Yeah.
I think so.
I'm actually
pretty excited to watch it.
I think I'm going to be grossed out and annoyed.
There are going to be some gross moments. I know that. I think we might need a shower after this. We'll see.
Well.
I'm excited to talk about gender equality after we watch The Mask.
In The Mask.
Yeah.
And our participation in it. Everybody get ready. We're going to feel culpable today.
Exactly. Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll watch the movie, come back, and talk about it. So, Rachel, what are you making for us today?
I am making a sugar-free chocolate lava cake.
Oh, my God. And is that chocolate right there that you're stirring up in that... it's like molten chocolate in a bowl that you're stirring with a spoon.
Yeah, it's... I'm melting my butter and my chocolate together.
Ooh, that looks so delicious. Is that going to be the interior of the lava cake?
It's not. It's actually going to be part of the batter.
Oh, okay.
The thing that's good about these types of desserts is that, they don't require, to fool with ratios when it comes to flours. Because the flour is usually almond flour or coconut flour.
Oh, okay.
And so the almond flour doesn't, absorb as much liquid.
Gotcha.
And so I don't have to put a frozen thing of ganache in the middle of this. It's going to be molten by the nature of itself.
Oh, that's awesome. I was actually going to ask how lava cakes get done, because I've never seen one get made. So you mentioned something about putting frozen ganache inside. What's that about? Is that the traditional way to do it?
One of the ways to do it is to, usually lava cakes are a flourless cake and they get their structure from egg.
Okay.
But some people prefer to freeze little rods of ganache and stick a frozen rod in the middle of them as they're baking. And so the center comes out a lot smoother and more luxurious.
Gotcha.
That's a more high class, highbrow way to do it.
Okay, but so we're doing it
the
old rustic down home peasant style.
Yeah, that's what peasant we're doing. Style. Fucking plebes. That's us.
And so just the way that the batter is made, mm-hmm. it'll get the typical cake on the outside and then a molten inside.
Yep.
And it's all the same batter.
Why is the microwave doing that?
That might be the oven. That is the preheating. Oven. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so it's all the same batter.
Uh-huh.
And like you said, just by the nature of it, the interior stays molten.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it. We're going to cut it open when it's done and take a picture of that, too. Mm-hmm. Are we putting any, powdered sugar or anything on the outside? What's the little cake supposed to look like?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do, is just a little bit of, swerve powdered sweetener.
Oh, okay, yeah.
On top of it, and it'll be, just a, one you'd get at Chili's back in the day.
Get at Chili's.
Yeah.
Yeah, you went to the theater, you saw The Mask starring Jim Carrey, and then you went to Chili's and got a Big Mouth Burger. That's a typical Thursday night for a family in the suburbs.
Gosh. God, that sounds so horrible.
Yeah, at the time, it was pretty fun as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, when you're a kid, you're dumb.
Yeah. Just... I mean, that's... I can't argue about that.
Uh-huh. I mean, that was... If we're honest, that was, like, really a slice of millennial childhood right there.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed that childhood, honestly.
Yeah. Like,
I know that it's a life that we would probably find interminably boring now, but, you know, yeah. We're in our 30s. Why would that be fun?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's so much more to do.
But I am excited about lava cake. Are there any other tips you might have for anybody that's trying this at home, Rachel?
Just be gentle when you're heating your chocolate, because if you heat it too much, it can separate, and then you won't get the consistency that you want.
Like separate from the butter?
It separate. Well, the cocoa solid separates from the like the butter fat actually separates.
Oh wow! Okay, I didn't know that. And how can you tell if that's happened?
Oh, it looks kind of curdled.
Oh, okay, yeah. So that sounds like it would be pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean the chocolate that you melted looks amazing and silky and shiny and glossy, and I can't wait.
You can't wait, huh?
To see what it looks like in the actual lava cake. So I guess we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be right back. Okay, so these look delicious.
They actually look pretty good, which is rare for my desserts. Most of my desserts look pretty ugly, but they taste good.
This one looks like fucking magazine quality. It's really cool, yeah. You were worried about not being able to get them out of the ramekins.
I was, but then I just slid a sharp knife around the edge and they popped right out.
Yeah, so what would cause them to stick in there?
Any number of things. I used Pam, so that usually works really well.
Like to just, like, spray the ramekin before you put the...
Exactly. Yeah. But some recipes call for buttering, and sometimes things just stick. You don't know why.
There's so many different factors in cooking, that's why I hate it.
Yeah, I know.
It's never the same.
I love it.
But yeah, these look amazing, and they came out so ooey-gooey on the inside. I love it. It's
like very ooey-gooey.
Yeah, so let's take a bite and see how it is. I can't wait to try it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Just look at it. It's like the two textures are so, so delicious. Mmm. Mmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty fucking great.
Oh, it's great, and the cake part... is so light. It's mm-hmm. way lighter than I thought it would be. Like, literally light, mm-hmm. is in terms of weight.
Yeah, it's because you gotta whip your eggs really well.
Yeah.
And it gives it, like, a really light kind of texture.
Yeah, it's awesome. And then, like, the like, molten batter mm-hmm. on the inside, like, just kind of gives it the heaviness.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of weird. I kind of expected it to be the other way around.
Yeah. And then the funny thing is, like, this is just... The only thing that's in these is... 2 eggs, 1 tablespoon almond flour, a couple tablespoons sweetener, and 2 eggs.
Yeah.
And like a couple tablespoons of butter.
Yeah, I noticed this seemed like a super easy and super quick recipe.
Yeah.
Like from start to finish, this had to have been like maybe 30 minutes.
Yeah, it was really, it's really easy and really fast. It's just like, it makes a perfect amount for 2 people.
And it's really luxurious too, which I think is kind of interesting. It's so easy to do. I can imagine this being, like, super popular at a party with, like, lots of people.
Oh, yeah.
Because even if you upped the recipe to make, like, you know, like, 12 servings or something, like, it still wouldn't take much longer than it did. Like,
oh, yeah. I can't even tell these are sugar-free either. Like, the texture of these is really good.
The only reason that I can tell that they're not sugar-free, or that they are sugar-free, is because I don't have a film on the inside, a sugar film on the inside of my mouth.
Yeah.
Which is kind of does not compute for the flavor that's coming in. This is so good. I think this might be definitely in one of the, like, top 3 of the ones that you've made for the show.
Yeah, you like this one?
Yeah, this is really good.
It is good.
And, I mean, you know, I part of me is just super excited with how quickly it was done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's just it right there. Like, sometimes I don't like to wait,
mm-hmm.
you know, 24 hours for a dessert.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's acceptable.
Yeah. So what do you think? Disaster or delight?
I would say delight.
Yeah.
You just said it was in the top three of the desserts, so I'd hope it'd be a delight.
Well, it's definitely a delight for me. What makes it that way for you?
The texture is really, really good. It came together really easy. I didn't have any problems. I didn't have to, like, fuss and fret over it. It was just, like, put it in the oven, take it out, pop it on a plate, you're done.
Yeah, you literally just mixed batter and put it in a ramekin and cooked it. That was it.
Yep, that's it. And like, the texture is really good. The cake texture is really good.
Oh, man.
And it's not horrible for us.
No, not at all. And, I mean, it... Yeah, the chocolatey bitterness is mm-hmm. there. It's kind of like a dark chocolate lava cake almost.
Oh, yeah. It very much is.
Yeah.
Which I
lots
prefer.
Of cocoa powder. Or did you use cacao?
I didn't use either. I used baking chocolate.
Oh, yeah, right. Because you melted it down. Mm-hmm. That's what we were talking about earlier. All right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. For me, definitely a delight. You guys, try this one at home. It was super easy mm-hmm. and super quick. And you won't regret it.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah, back to the movie.
Okay.
They call me Cuban Pete. I'm the king of the rumba beat. When I play the maracas, I go chick, chicky, boom, chick, chicky, boom.
So, The Mask, starring Jim Carrey and introducing Cameron Diaz.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Give us a little blurb, Rachel. Back of the DVD box.
'Nice guys finish last, but they don't deserve to, bitch.
I like that one. The derision in your voice was really coming through.
Yeah.
Nice guys finish last, but they don't deserve to, bitch.
Yes. That's what I'd call this one.
Sure, yeah, I would say that that's kind of the case. I think there are like some really mixed messages in this movie. And
sure.
I think like some of them are okay, and then some are like not great. And we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, if you guys haven't seen this movie, it's streaming on Hulu, so feel free. But yeah, it's basically about Jim Carrey is a nice guy who's socially inept and kind of shy, I guess, or cowardly.
Yeah.
And he finds a Scandinavian mask that probably has the god Loki in it, and it turns him into... kind of like a mischievous cartoon god version of himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's got, like, some kind of a... There's a loose plot where there's, like, some kind of a mob boss that, you know, is trying to kill him, and the cops are after him, too.
Yeah.
Overall, this is, like... This movie, I feel like, is, like, 90s comedy for dummies.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, this one follows the formula... From start to finish, and does not deviate once.
Oh, man. This would be a really cool movie to have in a class.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Like, generational artifacts. I would call this a generational artifact.
I don't think that anyone who's seen The Mask has ever thought this before. But I'm loving it.
Yeah,
I'm loving following this train
of thought.
Generational
artifact. And that would be so cool to do, like... And, like, the generational artifact of the 80s might be... I don't know. That would be like E.T., and you'd have to like pair it with a bunch of cool texts, and then you could talk about how they overlap.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's come back from that nerd path.
But anyway, I mean, you know, I appreciate movies that are well-structured and well-executed. I mean, sure, the subject matter of this movie isn't deep at all. There's not really like a very lasting impression that it leaves.
Yeah.
But... You know, it knows how to tell its story. It delivers the information to us well, keeps us entertained, or at least, like, you know, not so you're not falling asleep the entire movie. And
there aren't any parts that are, like, deep, what I call deep drag.
Yeah. It's just that there's lots of setups and payoffs, and, you know, you leave feeling satisfied. Like, you leave with closure when you've watched this movie.
It's like whenever you go to Chili's and you get those Southwest egg rolls, and you eat them, and...
What's with you and Chili's today?
Because this movie just reminds me of Chili's.
It's the Chili's of movies. I would say that that's probably the case.
Yeah,
and or it's got the TGI Fridays or the Applebee's.
It's got the same color schemes.
I think maybe this is the I think maybe a more accurate metaphor is that this is the Bennigan's of movies.
Because Bennigan's always smell like cigarette smoke.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, so Bennigan's is kind of in the same class of, like, forgettable mediocrity.
Yeah.
But this one actually did get forgotten and is just, like, lost to time. Like, when there's generational artifacts about, like, you know, the cuisine that we consumed in the 90s, Bennigan's is not going to be even in the appendix. Like, it's forgotten and lost.
Wait, where's the one that had the swing? Is that Shoney's?
Did Shoney's have a swing? That's like the down-home country kitchen, kind of.
Yeah, I don't know. There was one that had a swing.
I did not eat at Shoney's.
I mean...
It kind of intimidated me. All that dark wood.
Yeah, it's terrifying. Bennigan's had a lot of dark wood, too.
Well, I didn't say I ate at Bennigan's either.
I have never eaten at Bennigan's.
I never ate there myself. But I remember when they existed for a brief period of time. Look it up, kids. I'm sure it's out there on the internet somewhere. So I guess it's not completely lost to time, because if it's on the internet, it's going to be there for all time.
Now, like, there's going to be a record that future generations are going to find, and they're going to be like, what is all this retarded crap? Sorry to use the R word. What is all this... differently abled crap.
But yeah, there's some guy in a room, like a windowless room somewhere, who's like archiving the history of Bennigan's, like its Wikipedia page, and just like, well, you never know if you might need this.
We should edit the Wikipedia Bennigan's page. We should do that.
Yeah. The mask of family dining.
That's what we should say. We should say, that sounds like a believable fact. The movie The Mask has secret reference to Bennigan's, and now Bennigan's is known as the Mask of chain restaurants.
Oh my God.
Somebody wouldn't catch that, I feel like.
I don't know if that's true or not. I think maybe the person who would actually catch that would approach us wearing their tinfoil hat and, like, screaming about a microchip in their brain. But,
I've got a microchip in my brain! I knew you were the one who changed the Wikipedia page.
Got some beautiful mind shit going on. Russell Crowe.
Jesus.
Yeah, so this movie, The one thing I'll give to it right off the bat is that it is, you know, well-structured and well-made. Somebody went to film school and knows how to make a movie.
Sure.
Okay, good. Now let's get past that.
Yeah. Do you want to start on my list?
Start on your list. Because you go in order, and I like the way that you you bring up points. Because Rachel writes these all down as we watch the movie.
Yeah, I gotta keep notes. I'm afraid of not having enough to talk about.
Just funny ideas that she has in her brain. So what do you got on top of that?
The first one is, I wanted to talk a little bit about the aesthetic of The Mask. And how I thought it was a Tim Burton movie for a really long time.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Turns out it's some dude named Charles Russell, whoever the fuck that is.
Who is Charles Russell?
But yeah, I have no idea. I didn't look him up before this, but I don't recognize the name. Again, someone who's been forgotten.
Yeah.
In the river of time.
I was going to say the sands of time.
He's been carried away by the raging river of time.
By the whirlwind of time.
Okay. So
by the great redwood of time. Okay, I'm done.
So the look of this movie, it does have kind of like a comic booky stylized feel to it.
Yeah.
Like all of the city streets are like very, there's like, you know, smoke rising out of like vents in the ground. It's kind of like noirish, and it looks like Tim Burton's Gotham City, honestly.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Maybe that's why I thought.
I wonder if maybe they reused like old sets.
Yeah,
because that would make sense. Like if it was, you know, the same production company, which I think New Line Cinema did make the 1989 Batman.
I feel like maybe you're right, but I don't know.
Yeah,
so I can't confirm it.
But what do you like about the style of this movie, the look of it?
I think a lot of movies, especially ones today, struggle with finding a sense of place.
Sure.
And a sense of time.
Yeah.
That's like the main complaint that I had with Hereditary.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the horror movie that recently came out.
Was that, one, it was not the scariest movie I've ever seen, guys. The Exorcist still blew this bitch out of the water.
Yeah, it was a little disappointing. I mean, obviously I was scared. I covered my face in some points and screamed like a baby because I do that often in horror movies.
And other times.
But no, it was not the scariest movie I'd ever seen. But no. I did. But yeah, you're right. That movie struggled to find a sense of place because it had an interesting location, which is like kind of like a remote woodland hill.
Seemed like the Pacific Northwest to me.
Yeah,
maybe Canada.
And they didn't really focus on it enough that it made it feel like its own character. And I think that was a big misstep.
Yeah, because it could have been like the sense of place could have been such an integral part to this movie. Like it could have just been another layer to make it more interesting. But and so that's the kind of thing that I think a lot of movies today struggle with is finding a sense of place and being patient enough to let place develop as a character. And I think that what The Mask did successfully was create this sense of place and a sense of time, even if it's an imaginary time, and built a world that was consistent enough for me to follow along and not question the rules.
Yeah, and I think that lends itself well to people accepting a movie or like a theme like this because... Yeah. You know, like, Batman, the animated series, does the same thing, where it's kind of like, it's almost like a timeless feel, where it's like, they have, like, technology, but it's like 1930s, almost.
Yeah.
Mixed with, like, some retro-futurism type stuff.
Yeah.
And it becomes its own unique place. The same thing with this movie, where it's kind of got, like, everybody's kind of, they're in the modern day, but they're, like, living out this, like, roaring 20s, almost.
Yeah.
Or,
It's like old Los Angeles.
Yeah, old Los Angeles feel to it. Yeah. And so it almost gives it a timeless quality where you can be like, okay, yeah, I know where they are. I know, like, what this world is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
Even though it's kind of a fantasy version of that.
Yeah, and I actually think that it's like a 1930s Los Angeles with a, like, 1945 overlay of Miami.
Yeah, exactly. It does have that. And so, yeah, I think that's interesting. It does make that part of it memorable.
Yeah, like, I get it. Okay, this is the world of The Mask. I buy it.
But speaking of, I mean, the director, Charles Russell, who we have no idea who he is.
Who are you, Charles?
The writers, I don't even remember their names. I know there were two of them, and they're both men, but I don't remember their names.
Yeah.
There are a lot of, there's like a lot of careers died in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the funny thing. There is this guy. He's one of the henchmen. And he looks like a bassist from the band Yob.
Yeah.
Like, he looks... He's, like, kind of thin and, like, stonery looking. And not a great actor. But he's probably a really good bassist.
Yeah.
Like... This is how I imagine this dude's life and how it goes. He, like, gets up in his shitty, half-air-conditioned, like, L.A. apartment, and he fucking goes on to set, and he's, like, excited because he's working on The Mask, and Jim Carrey is around, and he gets to talk to
him. It's like a real Hollywood movie.
Yeah, it's, like, and it's good. It's good. And, like, he tells all his friends and his D&D group, and they're like, way to go, man. And they fucking drink a little bit more Mountain Dew that night.
Yeah.
And then he gets up the next day and goes to his fucking role, like, as a henchman that he's not really comfortable with. And he has band practice that night, and the director's mad at him. And this is, like, the last thing that he did, but now he just plays for, like, a fuzz rock band and a stoner metal band.
Yeah. And he probably, like, sells auto parts.
Yeah, he has,
at the, like, strip mall.
Yeah, he's, like, a, what are they called? Service manager?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who just, like, you look at them, and you're like, okay, this guy's semi-capable actor. Where did he go?
Yeah.
Where did she go? Because I don't remember any of these people being in literally anything else ever.
Curse of the Mask.
I mean, so Jim Carrey obviously goes on to have a career, and Cameron Diaz as well. Peter Reigert, who is the detective that I think is funny in this movie, who's like chasing Jim Carrey's character the entire movie.
Yeah.
He had, like, a semi-career in TV, like, does guest spots a lot, He's a that comedian kind of thing.
Too, isn't he?
I don't think so.
Maybe a comedic actor.
Yeah, I think he normally plays a straight man in comedy. And then he also has, like, small dramatic roles. Lots of them.
Has he ever been in an Adam Sandler movie?
I can't think of one.
That's the measuring stick.
Oh, just wait till we get to an Adam Sandler movie. I've been really excited about, you know, doing a Happy Gilmore Day or a Billy Madison or something.
Too good for your home ball?
And we're going to do some Chris Farley also, because that was definitely important as a child.
Teasers, y'all.
But yeah, back to the actors in this movie. So yeah, those are the people that went on to do things.
Yeah.
The main villain in this movie, the only other movie I've seen him in was Blue Streak, where he's also the villain.
Oh, damn. And he's How do you remember this shit?
I remember because the mask was important to me, damn it. So I know what happened to everyone in it.
You have like a fucking crazy associative memory.
Yeah, well, the guy from Blue Streak with Martin Lawrence, he's the villain in that, and he's the villain in The Mask.
Yeah.
Those are the people who have been in anything else ever. Now, there's so many other characters in this movie. Jim Carrey's, like, kind of sexist, weird, creepy friend in The Mask.
Never saw
him again.
What the fuck happened to that dude?
It was like they were trying to, like, get him to be, like, secondary comic relief. And It was just not working. Like, He's just no good.
He's no good. And, like, his timing wasn't good. He's just like, who is this guy?
He looks like Tom Arnold's little brother. And he's a failure. Like, just like Tom Arnold.
Whoa, Jesus. Sorry, yeah. I was just remembering how happy I am that I don't have to go to this old job that I had that was the worst.
Damn. Were you thinking about that because of Stanley Ipkiss in this movie? Yeah. Works at a bank that he doesn't want to, or that he hates?
Yeah, yeah.
What place are you thinking of?
Should I say it? I'm afraid I'll get in trouble for libel. Like, they'll sue me.
Yeah, let's keep it then. Just in case. I don't want to be spreading. You know, if you have nothing nice to say... We don't follow that rule.
Vaguely allude to it.
Yeah.
On Facebook.
Yeah, I am glad that you don't have to go back to a job that you hate.
Yeah, me too.
So yeah, this movie, Stanley Ipkiss hates his job, and he has a wisecracking friend who, like, is just trying to get him laid, like, so bad.
Yeah. He's like, if you get your dong wet, you get your brain wet. With all kinds of promotions and money and shit.
I mean, you know,
that's exactly what he said.
Yeah. You've seen this movie before. It's just like, you know, this guy's not getting any, and his friend's like, we gotta get you some. Come with me to this party. Like, this whole movie is basically about, like, trying to have sex with a woman. And,
isn't every movie made by straight men about that?
And I really... Yeah, we talked about how this movie is structured really well. It's also well-structured in, like, a negative way in that it follows a very clear, like, kind of, maybe not misogynist, but definitely not female-friendly path.
Well, yeah, I actually wrote down, like, on my notes, the treatment of women in pulp scenarios.
Yeah.
Because I'd consider this, like, drawing from pulp.
Definitely.
Like, pulp magazines, those, like, pulp detective novels, all that stuff, like, that Quentin Tarantino has a fucking hard dick for, you know. And so I think about that, and I think about this little novel that we picked up in a junk shop called Sin Cruise.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got, like, that hyper-moralist, you know, like, crazy, like, titillating thing, but, like... It's on the sin cruise.
Yeah, you know we bought this saying? Book of 60s, like, erotica for men.
Yeah.
It's like this pervy, like, this guy goes on a cruise by himself, and he goes on the cruise because he heard you can get laid on cruises. Yeah. And so, like, basically, he hooks, like, this guy in his cabin is, like, they share a room, and this guy's been on, like, a dozen cruises and knows how to get people... to answer the bone phone. So
what the fuck? Who are you?
Yeah, he knows how to...
what the fuck?
He knows how to get the ladies into the cabin for the sexin' and so on.
Yes.
And so the book if you can call it that, is basically this guy going from room to room having different sexual experiences.
Well, then he falls in love with two sisters at the same time. And
well, you've
like,
been reading a lot more of it than
well, me. Yeah, that's my pooping book.
Yeah, gotta have a book for pooping. I can't believe you're almost done with it. That's a lot of pooping.
I read fast too.
Yeah, I need to get you a prostate exam.
I don't have a prostate, Jordan. I'm a woman.
Oh right.
Yeah.
We need to get you a rectal exam though.
No.
For the bowels.
No, there's... I don't need any kind of.
And speaking of
rectal exam,
that I just said that to bring us right back to the mask.
Wow.
Because. So the main character gets ripped off by some mechanics, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
this is fucked up.
His solution, when he's the mask, is to go over and sodomize both of them with fucking tailpipes.
Yeah.
And it's not, like, just implied. I mean, at first it is. And then later on it just shows them both coming out with, like, huge pipes, like, shoved up their asses. And the guy's like, call a proctologist, the best one in town, my God.
My God!
At the like back in when I was a kid, I thought that was hilarious.
Now, nowadays,
it's like, wow, that's fucked up.
I know. Now I'm just like, oh, are we really gonna like make light of sexual assault?
Yeah.
Again?
It was pretty ridiculous.
Like, men can be sexually assaulted too, and that's a sexual assault, and it's not funny.
No, it's not at all. It's but like I couldn't believe that that's actually in this movie.
No, me neither.
There were a couple other things like that where I was like, wow. Like, did he just say that?
Or they just kill that dude right at the beginning?
Oh, yeah. Like, people die from the very first scene. Like, there's a scuba diver who's, like, unearths the mask, like, under the water. And then gets crushed by a pipe and screams.
He's like, blah!
Like, blah! I'm dead! Like, that's the title sequence.
Yeah.
Like, the mask, like, comes out of the bubbles of his death.
Yeah.
The words, the mask. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some dark shit that goes on in this
movie. There is. For sure. There is.
He's like some kind of a like Chechen mob boss or something that's in charge.
Is he Chechen?
I don't know. He's
like South American.
Yeah,
like
maybe.
Colombian?
I don't know. He had like the actor's name was something like Orestes McKenzie or something like that. Like,
you're
it was
just like,
weird.
How do I determine like, the ethnicity of this person?
Like, I have no idea who this fucking
Orestes
person is.
Orestes McKenzie O'Neill, Zimbabwe, Richard III. You're like, who is this?
That's racist.
Yeah,
so again, another actor that's like forgotten to time who was never in anything ever again. But this mob boss is like threatening to castrate people and like gonna.
Yeah.
He whacks a golf ball out of the villain's mouth. It's weird. There's a lot of villains in this movie.
There are, and they're not. Like, there's none of them that are interesting enough, really.
No. Well, about halfway through the movie, you did say, like, oh, wow, these villains are. Like, I actually, like. Kind of root for them a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Because they try to pull off this bank heist, and Jim Carrey robs the bank first and then brings the cops, and the cops, like,
kill one
of their friends or whatever, one of the bad guy's friends. And you were like, oh, man, sympathetic villain.
Yeah, and then they just ruin it by, like, having him slap women around, and he kicks a dog, and, like, I was like, okay, I get it, movie.
Yeah, he's a bad guy.
He's the bad guy, okay? I understand. You don't need to have him kick any more puppies or throw a kitten in down a drain pipe or something, okay?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, the villains are not really interesting. You know, none of these characters are really all that interesting.
Mm-mm.
Like, they have, like, the mildest of goals. And
yeah.
It's pretty boring. Like, I mean, Stanley Ipkiss, Jim Carrey's character, he's, like, you know, kind of a down on his luck. He's not a loser. He's just, like, he's... calls himself a nice guy. Other people call him a nice guy.
Oh, the nice guy narrative. We might as well jump right into that.
And, yeah, I mean, I don't know that I would say... So, I guess we should clarify what we say when we say nice guy and say it in a derogatory way. Because there's a difference between, like, actual nice people and a nice guy.
Yeah.
In terms of that we're talking about. So,
yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Nice guy, trademarked, not by me.
Yeah.
Property of the internet. Is whenever it's a guy who tries to woo women by how nice he is and how gentlemanly and how much chivalry he can dole out.
Yeah.
And he doles out the chivalry like he's putting coins into a machine, a sex machine, and he's going to get sex out.
An extreme version of this would be like... someone who is like, oh, my lady, how may I help you? That kind of thing. Like,
yeah, and like, whenever I clearly don't need help, and I don't want to be patronized, and don't fucking talk to me. I'm in the store. Leave me alone.
If you were my girlfriend, I would cook dinner for you every night and massage your back and treat you well and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
All that kind of crap.
Like, the sentiment behind that, if it's welcome, is fine. Like, if you want to be a really caring, attentive person, that's great. But being attentive and caring, quote-unquote, to somebody who you're not intimate with is quite a bit different.
It's also not caring. It's like putting in nice tokens to get sex out.
Exactly, yeah.
It becomes an unfair exchange.
Right. And so I don't think that this character is that, per se.
No, but there's still problems.
Yeah, because, like, what he really is like a simpering kind of... I don't know. Maybe he is kind of what we're describing in the original definition, because he is kind of just, like, not interested in getting to know people. He seems to be just, like, interested in being in a relationship with whoever. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to tell. But, I mean, he also, like, he wants to be nice. So, like, the lady that... a lady wanted to see this concert, and he got tickets for them to go together.
Yeah.
And then she wants to take her friend. So he's like, oh, you know what? Just take your friend then.
Yeah.
Like, I guess that would be a nice thing to do. But his friend, like, chastises him for it and is like, hey, what are you doing? Like, that was the weakest thing I've ever seen. Like, what was he supposed to do? Was he supposed to be like, no, you're going with me? Like, then she wouldn't have been happy. Like, this woman wasn't... She put him in
a bad spot, but, like, what you should do is be like, oh, I thought we were going together. I was under the impression we were going together. If we're not, I'd like my ticket back, please.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a boundary. Put it up there. Like, don't take advantage of me.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I was concerned about with this movie. Like, it's like, don't trust women. Don't trust any women that appear smart, because they will all turn around on you and steal shit from you.
It does happen that there aren't very many women in this movie. There are three, I think, that are named.
Yeah.
Or actually, I don't think even the first one is named, but she has a significant enough role that I think we can count her in this list for the purposes of it.
Mm-hmm.
The first person is, like, his coworker that he, like, buys the tickets for, who, like, tries to subtly reject him. And then two is the reporter, the redheaded reporter, who betrays him later on in the movie for $50,000, turns him over to a mob boss to be killed for 50 grand. And then Cameron Diaz, who is just like a dancer with absolutely zero personality whatsoever.
She's so scared. She needs to be rescued. Oh my God, Stanley Ipkiss.
Like, it's almost like... I mean, I understand it. Like, so a character being attractive, I think that can be a genuine character trait in a movie, but it has to go along with, like, a lot more. Just like in real life.
It's just the most boring one. It's the most boringest character trait. Like, they tell you in workshop, don't make your character, like, she was so beautiful, because it's called Mary Suing, and it's like, you make your character too attractive and too... like, capable, then they're unlikable.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, this character has nothing except the fact that she is attractive.
Right.
Like, an attractive, basically, cocktail dancer, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't have any wants or needs of her own. She doesn't seem to, like, have any personality traits that I could describe outside of just, like, she exists and talks to people.
Yeah.
I mean, she does have a job in that she's a dancer, but it's like, I don't know, like, at no point in the movie does she express any desire for anything other than, like, I want to be with our main character.
Right. No, she seems to be hunting for a man. She did have the camera, so she was, like, the mob boss's girlfriend or whatever.
And kind of, like... partner in crime, I guess.
Yeah.
Which would have been an interesting thing to explore, but they kind of drop it immediately.
Yeah, because they don't want women too capable, you know.
Yeah, I mean, she helps them scout out the bank in, like, the first 10 minutes of the movie.
If girls can do something that I can do, that makes what I did lesser.
I guess, maybe.
Don't you dare be better at League of Legends than me. Fuck you! We can't let women be quarterbacks. They might get hurt, and their baby-making parts won't be able to make a baby.
Oh, Jesus.
Fuck yeah. That.
That is some BS.
That's what this movie screams to me sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that... So one of the things that I think... Like, obviously this movie's harmful to women. Cameron Diaz is sexualized throughout the entire thing and is a complete object. Like, nothing, yeah. Nothing more. But Jim Carrey's character, even if we, like, ignore all of that and say, like, okay, this is a movie where the guy gets the girl or whatever, it still has, for some reason, this simpering, like, weak bank accounts manager is going to get into a fist fight with the fucking mob boss at the end.
Yeah.
And, like, just be, like, beating on him. Like, not with the mask on, with the special powers. Like, they have to prove... Like, somehow Hollywood feels like it has to prove to us, the audience, that this man is, like, he deserves the woman because he is a man, a physical,
Yeah, he's
like,
a man. He's a man of action.
Like, he has to dominate not just mentally, but physically as well to be considered a man or be considered a hero.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really dangerous message to send to our kids. And I think that that's where this movie goes, like, horribly wrong. Because it does kind of have a message... I think that the basic message of this movie is to kind of, like, you know, accept yourself and be who you are. Yeah. And, you know, that's because, like, he chooses not to be the mask.
Right.
And people approve of that. Like, they like him better than the mask. And that's a good message to give. But not when it's coupled with, like, you also have to be physically dominant.
Yeah.
In, like, a traditionally male way.
Yeah.
Like, I wish they would have focused more on the fact that, like, you know... It is part of Stanley's character that he's a little weak. Like, he grows in that he's not, like, emotionally weak anymore.
Yeah, but he's able to, like, establish healthy boundaries with people.
But I would have liked them to show that he solves problems in different ways.
Yeah, that always makes things more interesting.
Especially, like, you know, it would be so easy to do. He has, like, you know, a very specialized field of interest where he's, like, he's a grown man who lives by himself who watches cartoons at night.
And has a bunch of comic books and action figures.
Yeah, so he's a man child.
Man, it's so much cooler whenever you can solve things that aren't, like, without using your fists.
Yeah.
Like, yesterday, I wanted to boil a crab creature in Call of Cthulhu with a dreaming spell.
Oh, in our in our role-playing game?
Yes!
Yeah. You couldn't do that, though. It's too big.
Too big.
Yeah, you guys can hear about that on our Fire and Phil Wells' Fire and Blankets podcast.
Yeah, you should see that.
That comes out on Fridays. Look it up. It'll be on there.
Nice plug. Very natural.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
You're welcome.
You just slipped it right in there. It was nice.
I did. I set it up.
But anyway, what were we talking about? I'm sorry.
Oh, shit. We were talking about... Oh, traditional masculinity and domination. And
Yeah. Like, why couldn't they have given him, you know, he comes up with inventive and, like, even, like, crazy crackpot ideas to solve problems. It doesn't matter. Like, stuff that's, like, cartoonish in its nature, where he's like, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put a fucking bucket above the door and it's going to drop paint on them, and that'll get in their eyes, and then I'll take the gun from them. You know, stuff like that. He can come up with, you know, interesting ways to use his brain, which is obviously his asset in this movie.
Yeah.
Not his brawn.
Yeah.
But instead, they're just like, okay, he's got to beat this guy in a fist fight.
Yeah, that's super silly.
I think it was a misstep.
I do too.
Even from, like, a filmmaking perspective.
Yeah.
Or just, like, it wasn't in line with the character.
My notes are hilarious.
What else you got on there?
Let's see. We talked about the nice guy narrative. I have one. The first thing on my second page says condom joke.
Oh, yeah. There was a fun, like, so he's out on the street as the mask.
Yeah.
And these, like, punks. Hoodlums and punks, like, surround him.
Yeah.
It's a very diverse group of punks, too, now that I think about it.
They're just like, wow.
They're led by basically, like, every metalhead you've ever seen at a, like, a back room metal show.
Yeah, just like kind of chunky guy.
Yeah.
The fucking...
With the long wavy hair.
Oh, yeah. And then, like, your skinny ass friend who's, like, too short and a little too violent, and you're like, man, this is just dude taking his medicine before he
like,
came.
In the background of their little gang, there's, like, a black dude, there's a Chinese guy, there's a woman with, like, a punk haircut.
And an acceptance piercing,
This is, like... everybody got together for Punk University's college photo, and they're like, we got to get at least one of everybody in here.
Yeah.
But two white guys, though.
And, two white guys, and they got to be the ones that do the most active parts.
Yeah, but so, and that is the case. But yeah. They chase Jim Carrey down an alleyway, and yeah. he does this like bit where he's like a carnival barker.
Yeah.
And makes them balloon animals, and then like...
Yeah.
He's like, so he makes a balloon animal, and then he reaches in his pocket to grab another balloon, and he pulls out a fucking, like, used condom, it looked like.
Yeah, or at least an unwrapped one.
I never got that when I was a kid.
I didn't either.
That was so shocking.
That was shocking. I had no idea what a condom was. Yeah. Like, I thought it was another balloon, and I didn't get the joke, I think.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I thought it was a wet balloon.
Yeah.
And or, like, something to do with fish for some reason.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah, that is weird. I don't know. But now realizing that it's a condom and possibly a used condom, I'm kind of wondering, like, who the fuck's idea that was.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny, I guess, like, realizing it. It just kind of shocked me.
Yeah, it was a little shocking.
I was like, I don't imagine adults watching this movie. I mean, like, who is this movie for?
Like, 13-year-old boys.
I mean, it's rated PG-13. And yeah, I guess maybe it is for 13-year-old boys.
Yeah.
Like, people that are still into cartoons and are developing an interest in boobies.
I have unless they're developing an interest in dicks, let's not leave out our gay brethren.
And they also like wallet chains and the Brian Setzer Orchestra.
Yep.
Swing dancing, ska dancing, oh, all yeah. of that shit.
It was a particular subset.
So yeah, this movie was literally made for me.
Uh-huh. My God.
Oh, man.
Does it feel good? Does that feel amazing?
Let me tell you, it does feel amazing. Like, but after a while, it gets tiring. In the beginning of my middle age, mm-hmm.
Is 30 the beginning of your middle age?
I don't know.
No, I think 40 is.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, pre-middle age, I'm starting to wonder, like, what the fuck was wrong with me? Like, why did I enjoy this movie so much? Like, I remember quoting and acting out line after line after line of this movie.
Oh my God.
It was more annoying than this movie. Mom and Dad, if you're listening, I'm so, so sorry. Because just listening to this, I'm like...
Apologize to your sister, too.
I'm like, I'm glad some of the dialogue in this movie is moving quickly because it's annoying me and I want it to be over. And just imagine if a 13-year-old boy came up to you after this movie and started repeating the same annoying parts over and over again.
Oh, my God!
That kid was me.
No, Jordan. See, your mom knew. That's why you weren't in public school. My God!
Like, there's that kid who likes to act out the mask. Everybody get him!
Oh, just man. Fucking... It would be shit, like... You would just do that, and everybody would... One dude would just push you hard into a locker and, like, walk away. No one would beat your ass, because you're not the kind of dude who needs an ass beating.
Yeah.
You just need somebody to, like, push you against the locker once.
I need to get checked. That's why they call it checking in hockey, because sometimes you just gotta get checked. Get up into the boards. Get checked into the boards.
And then you would fucking throw a big ol' hissy fit and try and fight some of them and lose.
Well, it would take a lot. It would have to happen quite a few times, and then on a bad day... And then I would lose it and be like, what the fuck?
And then everybody would like you because you were all scrappy.
Yeah. But anyway.
Oh my God. What else about this movie? So annoying, though.
It is annoying. I told you earlier, I had the CD and I would turn it on as loud as my parents would let me and dance around and sing all of the songs on that album.
Oh my God.
So
imagine... No wonder gay guys hit on you in bars.
I like music a lot, and actually this movie, now that I think about it, was a really formative part of, because I played a lot of brass instruments when I was this age. I played trombone, I played French horn, I occasionally like dabbled in some others, but you know, in band at school. And so like hearing music that actually used like instruments that I played and sounded cool and fun, like, inspired me quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like, it made me want to play more music. It made me want to get better. And I ended up being okay at trombone.
You can only listen to Handel's Messiah so many times, is what Jordan's saying.
Well, we would play other things, like more interesting pieces also.
I was just kidding.
But yeah, it was fun to hear like more fun, upbeat horn music.
Yeah.
Definitely, for sure. Did the music or any of that have any kind of impact on you? What about the dancing? And there was like an impressive dance sequence in this.
There was. The swing dancing part was really impressive. For some reason, that stuff like just goes in, like, if there was an equivalent in one ear, out the other for your eyeballs.
Yeah.
In one eyeball, out the other. Like, that's what it would be. Well, I just don't care.
I wonder if, like, we're so, like, almost jaded to anything interesting in movies. Because, like, you know, movies that are quote-unquote exciting, you know, have huge explosions and, like, lots of flashing lights and big, I mean, the, like,
well, I don't like
cities are, like, folding in on themselves as, like, they're tears in the fabric of space and time.
No, stop.
Can visualize all of this.
Shut up. Enough of that. It makes me overwhelmed.
Exactly. And so all of that overloads our brain, and we can't even just take a, like, 2 minutes and say, wow, you know, that guy who just did the dance sequence is a pretty good dancer.
No, I like that. I can do that. Like, I can definitely do that, but I don't know how much more interaction I need with that other than to think that and let it exit my brain. You know, like, yeah. I don't need to hold on to this, like, when I'm reading Blood Meridian and thinking about fucking the brutal history of our nation.
Yeah.
You know, like, I need to keep that in my mind forever so that I can use it to ponder fucking the depravity of humanity. But fucking the mask, dance sequence in the mask, I can look at it, like, it let it dance around in my brain like a fucking colorful baby's toy for a minute, and then just leave my consciousness.
It is like kind of instantaneously forgotten when it's over, but it is like at the time it's like, whoa, okay, like those pretty good stunts, and then you're just like, mm.
Okay.
And it reminds me of this entire movie, like, for some reason it's super forgettable.
It really is. Let me see. Let me look at some of my notes here.
Like, there's not a lot under the surface of the mask.
Jim is pretty Canadian was one of my notes.
Jim Carrey. He does seem especially Canadian in this movie.
He really does. I think it's because sometimes I hear sorry. He's like, sorry.
Yeah.
And there's a part where he goes, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and, like,
yeah, he has the, because his character is so, like, simpering and everything, he's constantly apologizing.
Yeah.
And so I think that because he has to say, oh, I'm so sorry, like, so many times in this movie, it just constantly reminds you that he's Canadian.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Sorry.
I don't know why, but that's, like, the one part of his accent he hasn't been able to get rid of.
I feel like that's ingrained in Canadians forever. I work with a Canadian, and she says it like that, and she says a boot.
A boot, yeah.
A boot and sorry.
Yeah, I mean, South Park got it right. That's pretty funny.
It is pretty. The fucking Uncle Fucker song is, like, the funniest shit ever.
Yeah.
I swear. Anyway.
But yeah, let's talk about Jim Carrey, I guess.
Okay.
Like, you know, he's a, you know, he was a comedy icon from definitely this period. This was, like, the height of his fame, I would say.
Oh, yeah. He had a few dramatic roles, too, and he was really good in those.
How do you feel that he did in this movie?
You've seen one Jim Carrey movie, you've seen them all, pretty much.
You really have. But even so, I didn't find him to be all that funny in this one. Like, he was definitely goofy, and he's a great physical comedian.
Yeah, he's got great control of his body, like.
Yeah. He's definitely, like, if you've got a guy who's playing a cartoon god, like, you know, Jim Carrey's a good choice.
Rubber-faced Fart
like
Smith.
You gotta get the rubber-faced Fart Smith for a role like this.
As
it's
America's
true.
Sweetheart? God, he was America's sweetheart. We're dumb.
But yeah, I wonder if it was the writing just wasn't as funny.
Yeah.
Or if he just, like, wasn't really putting his all into it, which could very well be the case.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. Fine.
I don't know what the, where the disconnect was there. I mean, I don't think that there was a lot of room for him to, like, improvise and stuff.
Yeah. I think he's a capable actor. Like, he can allow the audience to experience the emotions that the director wants the audience to feel. You know, or whatever. Just very basic.
Yes.
You look incredulous.
I'm sorry. Our dog is over there kicking the wall.
Oh, is he?
And it's making me laugh.
Oh, he's yeah.
Got
just
his, he's got his big feet up on the wall. He's 100, he dreaming or something? He's 150 pounds. He's such an old, fat baby.
Yeah, he is.
He's got his feet on the wall. Okay, I'm sorry. Distracted. that's the problem with the mask.
That's a good segue to talk about dogs.
Oh, yeah.
You love the little Jack Russell Terrier in this. Oh, yeah. On Rachel's notepad, everybody just has to know that she just wrote at the top of one page, dog balls.
Dog balls.
What's that about, Rachel?
There's so many dog balls in this movie.
There really are. They focus a lot on the genitals of Milo, the Jack Russell Terrier.
Yeah, his little balls. He's just like, any shot from behind, he's like running to go do something. His little balls are just like a jingle jangling. His
balls are prominently framed in the shot.
It's so weird.
There's a part where Jim Carrey, like, as the mask, like, shaves and then wipes his face with the dog. And I remember saying to Rachel while the scene was playing, I was like, this makes me uncomfortable. Because it's got, like, it features the dog penis, like, well-placed and visible in the screen.
Dog penis and dog balls. I can't tell if it's supposed to be played for a laugh or if somebody, like, there was some, the director was like, yeah, fucking frame up the balls. Dog balls are funny.
Maybe, but I don't think anybody really gave it much thought. I got the impression that it was just like, here's a dog, and dogs have balls and penises. So, we're not going to make any effort to disguise that.
No.
Which I kind of, like, have some respect for.
You know, just
like, I'm holding up a power fist right now. Just, like, I hope somebody who made that decision somewhere, like, feels the respect, like, emanating through the ether right now.
Really proud of you for not putting a piece of duct tape over that dog's penis to make your audience more comfortable.
Or coming up with some ridiculous thing where, like, oh, you know, Jim Carrey's hobby on the side is that he makes dog pants. And so this dog wears pants.
It's the fig leaf of the 90s. Dog pants.
Yeah. Oh, man. I should work for Adam Sandler.
No, you shouldn't.
That's a movie right there.
No. You don't want to be morally bankrupt.
Yeah.
You don't want to mess with that side of the tribe.
But, I mean, what else you got on that sheet? We can only talk about dog balls for so long.
Yeah, dog balls.
It's a pretty simple observation, but it is funny.
Oh, I want to talk about this game that I made up.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, what would your mask persona be? Because it seems like the mask changes personas with who it attaches to.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, like, when Jim Carrey puts on the mask because he loves cartoons and he likes zaniness and stuff like that, like, he becomes a very zany, cartoonish character. But then, like, the villain puts on the mask and becomes, like, a very villainous, like, kind of evil and selfish version of it.
Because the mask is supposed to be an incarnation of the god Loki.
But I think they even say, like, when he goes and talks to Ben Stein, something about, like, how, oh, maybe it's, like, the mask brings out, like, your real inner you.
Yeah.
Just to, like, an extreme degree.
Yeah.
Which I do think is kind of an interesting idea that obviously is not explored
enough
in this movie. But,
yeah.
Do you want to start, or?
No, you go ahead.
So I was thinking about, like, who my mask persona would be. And I think of myself, in terms of my flaws, like, I am an incredibly vain person. So I feel like my mask persona would be, like, hyper handsome, like, to a degree that's, like, a little creepy.
Yeah, a little grotesque.
Yeah, and a little grotesque. I feel like I would be a huge prick.
Oh, really?
Yes, with an explosive temper.
Oh, wow. Ugh, you said it, not me.
Yeah, I would basically be a beautiful green man that, tries to get whatever he wants, and then when he doesn't get what he wants, he explodes violently. That would be my mask persona, would be an extreme version of me.
Okay, gotcha.
So yeah, I don't think it would be good if I got a hold of the mask.
No.
Yeah.
Too much hubris.
Exactly. I think I would have to give it up in the end.
Because, like,
it would not be a good experience for me or the rest of the world.
Like throwing the ring into Mount Doom?
Yeah, or just like...
I did it again!
Fuck you!
It's now my favorite thing to see how many times I can slip a Lord of the Rings.
It's too many times. But no, I mean, if I was Stanley Ipkiss, I would do the same thing at the end of this movie and throw the mask into the river. I think that I would have to, or else I would eventually kill myself.
I think my mask persona would be like, because Loki is like a god of chaos and a god of mischief, and even though people interpret mischief as like, haha, mischievous, it's impish, it's funny.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of chaos and mischief that's not funny.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And I think that that would be, because my innermost desires are always like, what would it be like to burn down a building?
Oh my God.
And so I think that mine would be like, as far as physicality, would be like an unassuming sort of, but like wispy shape that just sort of like flitted from place to place, just like burning down abandoned buildings.
You would be a completely like boiled down, chaotic, neutral essence.
I would.
Like a force. Like you're like a hurricane or a fucking tornado or some kind of act of nature that's just unstoppable.
That's what I would be like,
and completely out of control.
Yes, nobody can control me. Don't you dare try and summon me or defy me, priest.
Yeah,
I will fucking throw you against a wall. I fucking feel for the demon in The Exorcist.
Do you?
A little bit.
I mean, it's Pazuzu's just trying to cross over into, you know, our world, that's
Pazuzu's
all.
Pazuzu's doing what Pazuzu do.
You know, hell sucks. Who would want to stay there? If you could try and get out, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you possess a girl and basically, like, you know, break her spine into a million pieces by twisting her head around in her torso?
Like, that seems...
If you could live?
That seems horrifying to think about, but something that maybe not only demons would do.
I mean, true. That sounds like something a human would do who is selfish enough. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. So.
I just said it. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's on here forever. Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Who am I? Yeah, that was fun. I mean, I'm trying to think, like, mask personas of maybe popular political figures, such as...
Oh, my God, yes.
Like, if Donald Trump... Maybe Donald Trump is the mask.
Oh, fuck.
Like, he's wearing the mask. It's just orange instead of green.
Yeah. The emperor wears no clothes, everybody. The emperor wears no goddamn clothes! We said that with George W. Bush, but we mean it now.
Loki has taken over the United States government.
Oh, yeah. Loki is taking over the United States government and is... being like, what can I get away with? Let's make sure there's a tape of me getting pissed on by Russian models out there somewhere.
Oh, shit. You know what?
What?
I was just thinking about that opening scene where that diver finds the mask underwater.
Yeah.
Like, they're lowering pipes down there, and he's, like, attaching them. And the pipe, like, mischievously comes undone and falls on him.
Yeah.
That was Loki that did that the whole time. Loki killed that guy with some mischief.
Yeah.
There's, like, some mischief that's not so funny.
Mischief isn't very funny.
Dying trapped under a pipe underwater.
Sounds horrifying.
Drowning under a pipe. That sounds awful.
That sounds like not a risk I'm willing to take, and therefore that is why I will never scuba dive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, don't weld pipes underwater.
Done.
You'll be fine.
I like that game. That was fun.
It was. What else you got on there? Anything else in your notes? We start wrapping this up.
My last note was bassist from Yob.
Oh, yeah. That
Because I talked about that already.
That henchman. Yeah.
I was obsessed with that henchman.
Staying in his apartment. He's one of those guys. He's like kind of a featured supporting character, I guess.
I want that guy to be my friend. I bet he would totally be my friend.
Oh, yeah. I bet he would. He would actually probably be, like, I wish that we were still drinking. Like, that would be the guy that we would drink with. And, you know, just be total white trash. I think that he lives in a trailer and that he drinks like 100 beers a week.
That's a lot of beers.
Oh, yeah.
Damn.
It's not healthy, but, you know.
How does he stay so skinny?
He's just got, that's just who he is. It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that guy you were in the Marines with who kept a beer belly even though y'all were doing PT.
Yeah, somehow. It's a lot of beer to drink.
It's a lot of beer.
Yeah. So what do you think, Rachel? Is this movie a delight or a disaster?
I don't think it's either. I think it's...
Is it another D word somewhere in there?
It's a...
Directionless.
Well, it's like a dime store dozen.
It's dime double, store dozen, yeah.
Another, a double D.
It is. I mean, that's kind of... Even though the well-structured format can be a good thing. I think in this case, they followed it so closely that it's pretty derivative. And, you know, it's if you've seen one movie like this, you've seen them all. It's just, this one's got Jim Carrey in it.
Also, it didn't horrify me like Back to the Future horrified me.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't so it was problematic, for sure. Like, there were no people of color. There was, like three women in it, and two of them were double-crossers, and...
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on this. I mean, it wasn't something that I was going to get, like, totally infuriated with.
Right.
Which I kind of thought it might be because of how sexualized Cameron Diaz is. But her character is so bland and so cartoonishly one-dimensional that it's almost like, how could anyone think that this is reality? Or, like...
Yeah.
How could anyone think that this is anything other than just, like, blatant titillation?
Yeah, and, like...
It's so obvious. I feel like it's not as dangerous, you know,
in a lot of ways. I don't know about that. I think it's more dangerous in some ways.
Is it one of those things where it's kind of like, because we're just like, yeah, here it is, we don't care. Like, does that make it more accepted and therefore, like, maybe a little dangerous in terms of it's like, oh, yeah, this is all just okay to just treat women like this?
Well, like, here's the thing. So, European countries are far more want to censor violence and not censor sex.
Right.
Right? And so they have a lot less violent crime because, like we've talked about, we think media matters. And, like, media consumption matters as far as the general mood of society. I mean, there's reasons that there are huge propaganda campaigns going on now for Russia.
Right.
Like, media matters. So, what I'm saying is that, like, I think that if we were to do the same thing, like, censor violence and not censor sex as much, like, it would lead to more open dialogue and, like, I'm not about sex shaming or kink shaming or anything like that. I think that human sexuality is as natural as eating.
Yeah.
Like,
people like to have sex in general.
In general, people like to have sex, you know, disregarding...
It's part of life.
Yeah, disregarding, like, our asexual friends.
Yeah.
Why in the world would we let an 8-year-old boy watch somebody get blown away and, like, human life be thrown into the gutter and then be like, my God, don't look at that nipple, though!
Yeah. One that, like, half the population, everybody has nipples, but you know what I mean.
Yes, everyone has nipples. That's the quote of the day.
Everyone has nipples. You
know, yeah.
I mean, I hesitate to call this movie a disaster also. If I have to be binary about it, I guess I would call it that.
Yeah.
Just because, like, there's really no reason to see this movie at all.
No.
Like, there's nothing spectacular about it. There's nothing that makes it worth seeing where it's like, oh, look at that sequence. Like, that was really good. Yeah. I mean, even the scenes that were done well, they weren't done well enough for me to be like, oh, you got to see this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't share a single part of this movie on YouTube as, like, a 30-second clip.
That's a good metric. I like it.
Yeah. You won't ever find this... somebody sending clips of this around.
No. I mean, there might be, like, a GIF.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, that's fine, I guess. Whatever.
Do whatever you like.
Fuck The Mask. So many better Jim Carrey movies.
Dumb and Dumber!
Yeah.
I feel like I'm running at an incredible rate, Harry.
I've gone, like, 1 inch and you're already annoying me. You guys, thanks so much for listening. But you know what? Oh, I forgot. You know, we have another 5-star review.
Let's read it!
Rachel, if you'll do the honors.
Oh. The title of it is Funny and Insightful, and it's by RPG Obsessed. Even for someone like me, who doesn't watch a lot of movies, this podcast is always fun to listen to. The interaction between the hosts, their banter, their jokes... Their incisive critiques of the movies are engaging and interesting to listen to, even when I'm not familiar with the movie that they're reviewing. And when I am familiar, it's even better, because it lets you see something through a new lens. There's something in every episode that you'll find yourself thinking about days later. And if you're trying to eat healthier but still love a good dessert, the recipes are gold. They're delicious and will satisfy the sweet tooth.
Aw.
Aw, so nice.
That's super nice and very well written.
Yeah.
I like that.
That was. Thanks, RPG Obsessed. Yes. I am also RPG Obsessed. Not,
I love RPGs.
Not JRPGs. Not those.
I'll play JRPGs.
I know you will. And it's something that...
But I'm not going to, like, buy a body pillow or anything, so
well, yeah.
Worry.
I mean, that's something that we have to talk about. Like, there has to be at least a four-hour span between you talking about JRPGs and us having sex. That's the rule.
Oh, man, that's great.
Don't even say Final Fantasy.
No, yeah, I don't worry. I know those words are banned in the house. But you guys, yeah, so, you know, just like RPG Obsessed, if you want to have your review read on air, you can write a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And when we see it, we'll read it.
Yeah.
You know what else? We want to say thank you so much because we just got 100 followers on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
Which I can't believe.
Yeah.
You can go there for news about, you know, future episodes or current episodes and when the recipes get put up. Recipe for Disaster Podcast is how you find us on Facebook.
Yeah.
You can also send us an email at recipefordisastershow@gmail.com.
And if you have a fucking cool black metal or doom metal band, fucking email me your Bandcamp because I want to listen to you.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that would be awesome. Please
yeah,
do. We
do
love,
that.
We love that.
Wayfarer is the best.
It's unfortunate that we deleted that Birdcage episode where we talked about all the
metal. Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Yeah, whatever.
It was really good to talk to you guys today.
Yeah, thanks so much for listening.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.